How much does the media we consume actually shape how we see people or events, especially, you know, during conflicts? It's a question that keeps coming up.
It really does. And today, we're diving into some source material that gives us a pretty stark look at that process in action.
Okay.
We're looking at an analysis of articles from a specific Nazi newspaper, the Krakauer Zeitung, and also its regional version for the Lublin area, the Warschauer Zeitung. This covers the period between 1939 and 1944.
Right. So the mission here is to unpack this analysis, look at the strategies, the language this paper used back then, and figure out exactly how it built up this particular image of one group, the Volksdeutsche.
Exactly that. We're essentially looking at the findings of researchers who went through the archives, looking at the content from that period, kind of reverse engineering the propaganda machine.
Okay, let's start with definitions then, based on the source. Who exactly were the Volksdeutsche in this context?
Well, according to this analysis, the term Volksdeutsche was used by the Nazis for ethnic Germans, people living outside Germany's pre-war borders.
Okay.
And crucially, they didn't have German or Austrian citizenship before the war. So German speakers, maybe German heritage, but not technically German citizens.
Got it. And this newspaper, the Krakauer Zeitung, it appeared quite quickly after the occupation started, didn't it? Like November 1939.
That's right. Very quickly. And its role was definitely not neutral. Its stated purpose, the official line, was the bearer of the political will and cultural mission of the German nation in the East.
Wow. Okay, so they weren't exactly subtle about it, not just a local paper reporting the news.
Not at all.
So who were they trying to reach? Who was the audience for the Krakauer Zeitung or the Warschauer Zeitung in places like Lublin?
It was aimed squarely at German speakers in those occupied territories.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking Germans from the Reichsdeutsche.
Mm-hmm.
The Volksdeutsche themselves, of course, German soldiers who were stationed there, even German students doing practical training.
So pretty much anyone seen as German or serving the German state.
Yeah, in the general government area, that was the target audience.
And the source mentions a specific way these Volksdeutsche were identified, legally speaking, from early 1940.
Yes, that's important. General Governor Hans Frank brought in a decree, January 1940, that introduced a brown identity card. It was called a Ken card, specifically for the Volksdeutsche in the general government.
Okay.
And this ID card thing, it pops up later in the narrative the paper builds.
Right. So we have the paper, its audience, the group it's writing about. Now, the core strategy the analysis talks about, framing. What did the researchers find about how the newspaper used framing?
Framing, well, the way the source explains it, it's basically about picking and choosing, selecting certain aspects of reality, making them seem significant.
Highlighting some things, ignoring others.
Exactly. Highlighting, downplaying, ignoring all indactions to push specific ideologies, specific ideas, certain values. The analysis actually calls it a vital element in media control over content.
So you're curating what the audience sees and how they see it.
Precisely. And it's not a new idea, right? It comes from cognitive psychology,
right?
How our brains use mental frames or schemas. And sociology, too. Goffman talked about frames as interpretive schemas, how we make sense of things.
But here, it was a deliberate tool of propaganda.
Absolutely deliberate.
So what was the specific interpretive frame they were building for the Volksdeutsche in the Lublin district? What was the goal?
The explicit aim was to reconstruct their image, to present a very specific propaganda story. They wanted to create this unified way for readers to interpret and judge this group, a way that, of course, served the Nazi agenda.
And the analysis describes the newspaper's discussion about the Lublin Volksdeutsche as mainly political discourse.
Yes, it's presented as a discourse led by what they call symbolic elites, basically, the people in charge of the media.
Ones controlling the message.
Right. Designed specifically to influence the broader audience. It wasn't meant to be a discussion, more like top-down messaging.
Using specific strategies to do that.
The analysis found three main ones being used: persuasive strategies, informational ones, and expressive strategies. We'll see how they mix and match those.
Okay, so that brings us to the key research questions then. How did they build this image? What did the image actually look like? And what words did they use?
Exactly. The researchers asked, what were the interpretive frameworks? What was the resulting image? And what linguistic tools did the KWZ use to create it?
All right, let's dig into the findings. What the analysis actually uncovered in those newspaper articles. It sounds like there were three main themes, like pillars, holding up this portrayal of Lublin Volksdeutsche. What were they?
Okay, the first big one was history. Specifically, the history of German colonization in that region. Germanland, Lublinland, Zamoschenland.
Oh, okay.
The paper constantly brought up the long history of German settlement. Things like mentioning their internment just before the war, the process of getting those Ken Cartney ID cards we mentioned, and just a general historical outline emphasizing Germans being there for generations.
So history wasn't just background noise, it was key to the present story.
Absolutely foundational. Then the second pillar built on that, the perceived role these descendants of colonists were supposed to play in shaping the Nazi idea of the German East. They were presented as having this crucial part in the new order.
Okay, a historical mandate almost. And the third pillar sounds like it was very much about current events.
It absolutely was. This one focused heavily on the big resettlement actions happening right then. There was Heimes Reich, return to the Reich.
Right.
That involved moving descendants of colonists from Chem and Lublin lands back into Germany proper. The source even dates this quite precisely, September to November 1940.
Okay.
And then there was the other one, Fahndung nach Deutschem Blut, the search for German blood, or sometimes called Rückgewinnung, re-Germanization or recovery.
A different kind of action.
Yeah, this started in November 1940, targeted descendants in Zamoschland. The goal there was more about integrating them locally into the German structure, not necessarily sending them to the Reich.
So these huge population shifts were front and center in the newspaper.
Totally central. The analysis really stresses that the thread tying all this together, the history, the role, the resettlements, was the actual political policy of the Lublin authorities towards these Volksdeutsche.
It wasn't random they covered these things together. It was all meant to justify the policies.
Exactly. Selected bits of history, framed in a certain way, were pulled into the current political talk, specifically to shape how readers thought and felt and to make what was happening seem legitimate.
Okay, themes established. Now, the mechanics. How did they actually do it? The language, the examples. Where did this image building start in the paper?
The analysis points to a report from December 1939 as a key early example. It was about Volksdeutsche from Chum thanking Hans Frank, supposedly after being liberated. That piece really set the tone early on.
And what was that tone?
Very emphatic language. The analysis calls it descriptive evaluative. So not neutral reporting at all. It was actively assigning characteristics using loaded phrases.
Like what?
Framing the Volksdeutsche as, you know, brave men and women, stern faces, people who'd suffered under supposed Polish terror just because they were German.
Did they get specific with descriptions, physical descriptions?
Sometimes, yeah. Details about their simple, almost poor appearance, like mentioning terribly worn fur hats. It creates this visual, maybe even a bit pitiable, to contrast with their supposed inner German strength.
And the suffering angle was really pushed hard.
Oh, constantly. The language was heavy. Years of suffering, Polish arbitrary rule, terror, hardship, being harassed, worn out, really laying it on thick.
And using exaggeration, hyperbole.
Definitely. The analysis mentions comparisons like saying they were treated like a herd of cattle, or calling the internment prison the notorious hell of Bariza Kartuska.
Wow.
The clear aim was painting them as extreme victims of Polish actions in September 1939, right before the invasion.
So build the victim narrative to create sympathy, justify the Nazi rescue.
That's the core of it.
Why?
And right alongside the suffering narrative was this huge emphasis on gratitude.
Gratitude to the Nazis.
Yes. The analysis highlights texts, like one by a writer named Hirsch, focusing on the Volksdeutsche's supposed immense gratitude to Hitler for restoring their rights. Frank himself echoed it, thanking them for their sacrificial commitment and years of martyrdom, framing it as if their suffering somehow helped the German victory.
So victims, but also contributors, and deeply grateful. Okay. Then came the Ken Cart, the ID cards. The paper covered that too.
Yes, and that was covered mostly using an informational strategy, you know, explaining the cards, the process.
But still framed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Even there, the framing showed up. The Lublin district was presented as a good example, a model of how well this policy was working. Smooth, successful.
Did the descriptions ever get explicitly racial?
The analysis notes that yes, sometimes Volksdeutsche involved in these actions were described using the Nazi Nordic race criteria. Tall, blonde, blue eyes, reinforcing that idea of racial purity and value to the Reich.
And focusing on specific things as proof of Germanness.
Absolutely. A big focus, the source uses the word fetishization on German-sounding surnames and old family documents. These were held up as concrete evidence of their deep German roots, tying back to that historical colonization story.
So they weren't just getting an ID card, they were returnees.
That label, Heimgekehrte, those who returned home, was really key. They were depicted as people who, without hesitation, followed the voice of German blood. in hard times, coming back to Hitler's Reich, where they belonged. It's a very powerful emotional framing.
And even the events themselves, like getting the cards, were dramatized.
Yes, to really boost the significance, the pathos, the paper used persuasive storytelling and lots of Nazi symbols, descriptions of people giving the German salute, halls draped in swastika flags. It tied the personal act of getting an ID to the whole grand Nazi narrative.
Let's switch slightly to the history part again, the original German settlements. How was that framed? What strategy did they use there?
The source talks about a creative strategy for positioning those early colonists. They weren't just settlers, they were pioneers.
Heroes, basically.
Framed as heroes, yeah. Braving the wilderness, clearing land, bringing civilization, progress to the locals. That was the story.
So a civilizing mission centuries ago.
Exactly. And they use all these metaphorical labels to hammer it home. The colonies and the colonists were called things like a lonely island, remote island, clearly defined island.
Suggesting isolation.
Isolation, yeah, like outposts of Germanists surrounded by non-Germans. And other labels too. German blood, political fighters of the Führer, culture pioneers, pioneers of the East, a bulwark in the German East, an element of order. These aren't neutral terms at all.
No, they're incredibly loaded. Immediately paints a picture of struggle, importance, resilience.
And this history wasn't just told once. It was actively twisted and used between 1940 and 1944. History became evidence for alleged past discrimination against Germans and for their persecution of September 39. The past was weaponized for the present.
What about positive traits? What specific characteristics did they keep highlighting about the Volksdeutsche?
The analysis shows a very clear pattern. Religiosity and industriousness were pushed really hard.
Hardworking and faithful.
Yes, phrases like faith in German character, persistence and precision, fidelity to German origin, they show up again and again. And their attitude towards visiting German officials, always described positively. Open faces, free gaze, strong handshake.
Building this image of, well, virtuous, loyal, hardworking people. And the source says this positive image was often contrasted with their neighbors.
Yes, that contrast was common. The narratives would often paint these, you know, almost idyllic pictures of neat German farms right next to descriptions of rundown Polish farms.
Not subtle.
Not at all. He created this explicit dynamic. The hardworking, orderly German hero versus the perceived incapable Polish anti-hero neighbor.
So even with all the history and character stuff, the main focus was still the current policies, the resettlement.
Absolutely. That remained central. Heimans Reich, Rückgewinnung. The paper focused intensely on showing the scale of these movements, the condition of the people, the overall significance of German settlement in the East. It was all about constantly reinforcing the justification for these policies.
And the analysis found they even used different names for the people, depending on which program they were in.
That's a really telling detail, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For Heimans Reich, the ones going home to Germany, they might be called Deutsche Kolonisten, Volksdeutsche, Umsiedler, meaning resettlers, Rückzeidler, like returnee settlers, or Heimkehrer, those who returned home.
Okay.
But for the Rückgewinnung program in Zamosich, the recovery one, the terms were a bit different. Deutschstämmige Siedler, German-descended settlers. Deutschstämmige, German-descended people. Deutsche Siedler, Volksdeutsche Umsiedler, Kolonisten, Kulturpionier, or even Kolonisatoren.
Wow.
And Heinz und Reich itself was framed really euphemistically, sometimes called a modern migration of peoples.
So the language itself reinforced the specific story for each action.
Exactly. And the analysis found that the most common metaphor overall for Volksdeutsche was German blood. The most frequent adjectives, clean and diligent. The core narrative elements tying the community together were always hard work, a tragic history, and resisting Polonization.
And they even laid claim to the land itself.
Yes. The newspaper explicitly declared the land between the Vistula and Bug Rivers, where many lived, as unconditionally German earth. So it wasn't just about the people. The territory itself was claimed.
The source mentions they even used things like local proverbs to highlight positive traits.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Techniques to make the Germans seem admirable, relatable. They'd apparently translate or adapt local proverbs to stress German diligence, often directly contrasting it with perceived Polish laziness. The example given is, where the Pole has sand blowing in his eyes, the German even sows wheat.
Oof, that's blatant stereotyping right there.
Absolutely, using cultural bits to reinforce propaganda points.
And they also push this idea of a unified community, using specific terms.
Yes, lots of emphasis on concepts, stressing unity and shared identity. Terms like Herkunftsbewusstsein, awareness of origin, Volksgemeinschaft, the people's community, Gemeinschaftsbewusstsein, community awareness, and Gemeinschaftssinn, sense of community, all reinforcing this idea of a single cohesive German group bound by blood and history.
And gratitude was a constant refrain, almost demanded.
Consistently portrayed that way, they were the grateful beneficiaries of the Nazi Party's Deutschtumsarbeit, the work for Germandom, and especially the resettlement actions. Always shown expressing thanks to Nazi groups like the Hitler Youth, the BDM, the NSV, and specific officials, it hammered home the idea, we rescued you, be thankful.
And the way the paper describes specific events tied to these programs was also strategic.
That's what the source calls the articulative strategy. Describing things like resettlers arriving or people registering for cards. It wasn't just news. It was about promoting, legitimizing the Nazi political solutions for this group. Mm-hmm. Often with a direct ideological message, like the quote about needing to preserve precious German blood, which was threatening to seep into foreign soil. That kind of language.
And they personalized it too, individual stories.
Yes, sometimes they'd focus on the complicated lives of individual colonists, maybe even name them. That added a human angle, maybe made it more poignant.
Makes it relatable.
Right. And it wove personal stories into the bigger narrative, linking the individual colonist, Volksdeutsch, and Umsiedler, connecting their personal past to the collective story and the intended future.
And finally, there was an expressive strategy. What was that about?
This is about showing the alleged good results of the Rückgewinnung and Heimann's Reich actions by highlighting supposed successes, happy resettlers, productive new German farms. They basically closed the loop.
Sealed the deal on the interpretation.
Exactly. It reinforced the positive stereotype of the Volksdeutsch they'd been building all along.
So pulling all these pieces together, what's the overall picture the analysis paints? How did this discourse function in the Krakauer Zeitung?
The conclusion is that it was very highly structured. The analysis calls it hierarchical, linear, and coherent.
A very clear, consistent message. No ambiguity allowed.
Pretty much. Schematic, overtly propagandistic. It wasn't about nuance. It leaned heavily on metaphors, emotional language, trying to bypass critical thinking and just get an emotional response from the reader.
And the history part wasn't just background. It had a specific propaganda job.
Yes. Putting the current politics into that historical frame was meant to portray the Volksdeutsch as the original pioneers of the German East. That historical claim was designed to build this specific ideological, emotional attitude in the reader. Make the current policies seem like destiny, like correcting a historical wrong.
So bottom line, it sounds like every element of this framing served one purpose, legitimizing Nazi policy.
That's the core finding, yes. The consistent positive framing of the Volksdeutsche was pure propagandistic control. It was meant to direct how readers interpreted everything about this group and the events surrounding them, steering them towards acceptance, legitimizing the really harsh, controversial policies the Lublin authorities were acting towards ethnic Germans there.
Wow. This deep dive really shows, step by step, how a newspaper in a very specific dark time just systematically built an image using history, selective facts, emotional language, contrasts, all serving a political agenda, all to legitimize things like forced resettlement.
And what's striking, I think, is how this historical example, you know, focusing on certain traits, using loaded words, crafting narratives, it really gives you a lens, a powerful way to think about how media, even today, might still be shaping our understanding of different groups, different events. The context is different, but the techniques.
The power of the frame. It definitely leaves you thinking. Thank you for walking us through the sources on this.